Accession number 31448, Mr. Roy Jones, Reel 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Jones?
I was born on the 23rd of October 1926 in Rock Ferry.
And could you tell us a bit about your background? Is that where your family come from, Rock Ferry? What?
My mother came from a place called Port Rainbow, which is now Bromborough Pool. And my father, as far as I can remember, came from New Ferry, apart from his parents who were born in Wales, and I don't know whereabouts in Wales they were born. He was living in New Ferry when he met my mother.
Had he been in the Great War? I don't know whether he'd be too...
Yes, he served with the 1st Battalion Border Regiment. And I believe he was at the Somme and Passchendaele. But as regards dates and what have you, I don't know.
Did he ever talk about it, or did it affect him in any way?
It never affected him in any way, but my father was... probably a very private person. He never talked about his time in the forces. Never spoke to us at all about his time in the forces.
Now, what was he doing for a living?
He joined the police force. I cannot remember my father not being in the police force up until he retired. When he'd done his time in the police force. So that
was steady employment during the 20s and 30s?
Oh yeah, I think in them days it was probably a well-paid job in them days.
How many in the family?
There was five sisters, and I had three brothers, but one died at 6 months old. I was the eldest of eight.
Now, where did you live in Rock Ferry? You were always in Rock Ferry?
Lived in Rock Ferry all my life in Eldon Road.
And what was your house like? What was the sort of...
It was just a terraced house, which was three bedrooms and a living room, a kitchen and a sitting room. But it was a mid-terraced house. They're all terraced houses in the road.
So no facilities you'd have now?
There was no facilities. We had a bathroom, but the toilet was down at the bottom of the yard. It was a brick-built toilet at the bottom of the yard, and it was awfully cold in the winter.
Now, there's quite a lot of you, but you were reasonably off for a family at the time.
Yes, yeah, we never ever went hungry, as far as I'm concerned, and I think as a child you don't sort of think about whether the food is good or not. Well, in them days you just ate it, and in them days it was nothing to come home from school and have bread and jam for your tea. That was just a thing that happened. And that's what it was like then. So as far as I'm concerned, the food, and my mother and father provided me and my brothers and sisters with a very healthy life and well fed. And although you say a policeman, his wages were reasonably good, yes they were, but they weren't overly good, if you like. But having said that, as I just said before, we were looked after. And I can remember my mother never, ever having a holiday, or him, until after I came out of the army, which I was 21 then. So I can't remember my mother or father having a holiday before I was 21, which is totally different from the way things are today.
Was there a sense of community? You were Eldon Road.
Eldon Road, yes. neighbours. It might be hard now for people to realise, or people even to dream of, that you could leave your door open and nobody would dream of walking in. The doors were always open. If a baby, you'd see babies in the pram outside the front doors, just left, weren't touched. And as children, we could go up to a place called Victoria Park, and we'd have a game of football or whatever was going on. And even in them days, we used to get the bus. As children of about 11, to the four lane ends at Spittle, and then we'd walk from Spittle Crossroads down to Raby Mere, which was probably about 2 miles, something like that. So we could be out all day at 9, 10 and 11 years old, with your parents not having to worry about you. And I think as regards the neighbours, they were absolutely superb in them days. I mean, it was nothing to somebody to come knocking on your front door, could have borrowed a cup of sugar, or have you got half a pint of milk you could let us have? You know, it was that sort of thing. And they were fine. And I don't think you get that these days either.
What about before the war? What about your childhood games? What sort of recreations?
We used to play football in the street. We used to chalk wickets on a wall, and they were the stumps, and we'd play a game of cricket. And in general, you'd see the girls, they were always skipping or playing hopscotch. Or we'd have a game, what we used to call cards, and we used to save. My dad used to smoke Kensitas, and you used to get cigarette cards in packets of cigarettes, and we used to save them, and we'd swap them, or then we'd stand them up against the wall of a house and flick one card to try and knock the ones over that were quite simple, really, you know. But that's the way we occupied our times.
But so, now, what about your education? Because
I was educated at Well Lane Council School, and it was just a council education, and I left school at 14.
So just in 1940, just after the start of the war, well, 6 months.
Well, I was born 1926, so you went to school when you were five.
Now, how did you do at school? What was it? What sort of an education was it? Just a standard one. Well, what just did that mean then?
Just a standard education. It was nothing outlandish or anything like that. Nowhere near what they get these days. And I think for a lot of people of my age, it was just, you were taught how to add up, how to write, how to read, and that was about it. There was nothing special about school at all. The discipline was harsh in school. If you did something wrong, if your teacher didn't cane you, you were sent to stand outside the headmaster's office. Then you went in and he'd tell you what your misdemeanor was, and then he'd tell you what your punishment was going to be, and he'd say, right, 2, 3 or 4 strokes of the cane. And he used to walk to the wall and take this cane off the wall, and you had to hold your hand out, and he'd take it to the back of his arm raised and bring it down, and the tendency then was for you to just go like that,
move your hand in,
and he'd miss. Well, it made it all worse. And sometimes if you went to pull it back, you didn't pull it back far enough, and you got hit on the tips of the fingers, which was worse, really. And then we had one teacher, and I'll mention his name, Mr. Cathcart. And he was one so-and-so. He, when he disciplined you, and bearing in mind in them days you all wore short pants, grey socks, he would tell you to roll your socks down, and you'd get the cane on the backs of your legs. And I've seen mothers coming up to the school, and he's just shut the door on them and locked the door, and they'd be outside ranting and raving, and he should just go, oh, go on, get off home, to them. You wouldn't get away with it now. But although it was hard, I enjoyed my school days. But then again, when the war started, I think we missed probably about 18 months when the bombing was at its worst.
I'll come to that.
All right.
So how were you doing at school? What did you like? I mean, there's not much to like in a way, but...
No, I liked woodwork. We used to do woodwork. I really liked that. But it's hard to say really now. It's an awful long time ago, but there wasn't much for me to like at school. I liked football and I liked woodwork. But for the rest of it, no.
Did you do okay at it?
I probably shouldn't say this, but I will. I was a bit of a rebel at school. And I always remember the headmaster saying to me, when it came time for me to leave school, everybody used to get a school report, finish it. He told me straight he wouldn't give me one. And he said to me, Jones, you will never, ever make anything of yourself. And I am very pleased in a way that he said that to me, because that gave me, as young as I was, the motivation that I needed. For somebody to turn around and say to me, you will amount to nothing. That was the best thing that anybody in that school could have said to me.
Do you think he meant that, or...
I don't know. I don't know whether... Going on his attitude to me when I went in, yes, I think he did mean it. But when I think back now, he did me the biggest favour of my life. Because I thought, yeah, I will prove you wrong. And I did.
Now, what about the approach of war? You'd be...
I was 13. Well, it was declared on September the 3rd. I was 13 in the October. And I always remember I was playing football in Victoria Park. And I heard some adults say, the war's started. And I just ran home, because I didn't know what was what or what to expect. And I ran home, and my mother and my dad were there. And they just told me, yeah, the war has started. And just let's hope that it doesn't last too long. And from then on, the rationing came in.
Now, tell me about the rationing. How did that affect you and your family?
Well, as far as I can remember, I think rations for one was something like 2 ounces of butter, 2 ounces of lard, quarter of margarine, 2 ounces of tea. Not sure whether it was half a pound of sugar, a couple of ounces of bacon, and I forget now how much meat. And sweets were rationed. So I suppose in a way you could say, all right, if there was 8 children and 2 adults, that was 10 in the family, you'd probably think, oh, well, you know, you're getting plenty, but you're not, because your mother had to do all sorts with that sort of stuff, because you just couldn't go out and buy willy-nilly. I've seen them queuing up for bread, even though it was rationed, queuing up for bread and all sorts. But then again, we never ever went hungry. Mum used to make lots of soup. It'd be blind, there wouldn't be meat in it. But she'd make it out of potatoes and a few carrots or something like that. And probably OXO cube or something like that. But coming home, as I said before, for tea, bread and jam was the norm.
Did you miss sweet rations? Sorry, you didn't have much sweet rations.
Didn't have much sweets, but for me, whatever the ration was for sweets, I can't remember, was enough for me. Because give me mother and father the due, the sweet rations, we did get them. It wasn't as if me mum or my dad would say, oh, well, I like chocolate, so you're not getting any, you know, or we'll spend your coupons on this. Christmas time, I think then was about the only time that all the sweet rations were sort of bunched together to buy stuff for your Christmas stockings and whatever and things like that. And your Christmas stocking was literally a sock, and it always had an apple and an orange in the bottom, probably a couple of brand new halfpennies or a couple of brand new pennies, and you thought you owned the world if you got tuppence in your stocking. And nuts, there were always the big shoe nuts and walnuts in the shells, all in the shells. Not like you get them now, they're all in the shells. And that was about it, really. When the bombing started, or before.
Oh, just keep about. What about clothes rationing?
Clothes. There again, we were all always reasonably clothed. I know the girls, would have been a lot of girls. There was a lot of hand-me-downs, obviously, because the larger one handed down. But for me, there was nothing to hand down for me.
You were the first.
Because I was the eldest. So whether I could count myself as lucky, because my brother was younger than me, so he'd get what I had finished with. So I was probably the lucky one as regards the clothes. And shoes, well, my father used to sit down, if he wasn't at work, every Sunday morning. On a Saturday, he'd send me along to Coombs's, the shoe repairers, for a piece of leather, which would probably cost a shilling for quite a big piece of leather. And I used to get the nails for him there, the heel ball, which was like a black wax. And he had all the cobbler's stuff. He had a last hammer, pinchers and what have you. I know one of the things he used to say to me was, what's the first thing a cobbler used? And I said, I don't know. He said, it's the last. Then he'd say, well, how can it be the last thing if it's the first? You know, and this was just my dad having a bit of a joke. But he used to sit on the floor and mend our shoes, and then he'd belt more studs in the soles than soft Joe, so that they never wore out. You know, we had a lot of children, and I've seen them myself going to school with cardboard in the shoes with big holes in the soles. I've even seen them in bare feet, which probably sounds incredible these days, but it wasn't then. And I think with children in them days, when we reached the age of 14, or I did, and the war was still on, I've seen me push a pram from Rock Ferry to the gasworks in Birkenhead for a couple of bags of coke, big bags of coke, and put them on the pram and push it all the way back. But these are the things that you had to do. And I think then, as children, then you didn't think anything of that. It was part and parcel of your life in them days.
Now, what about I mean, there was a phoning war for, well, quite a while. And what about, did you get air raid precautions and gas masks?
Yes. My father was at Well Lane Police Station. And I think it would be probably mid-1940s, I think. It's hard to remember now. But he said to me, would you like to come to the police station, you and your mate, get a couple of your mates, he said, filling sandbags. So I said, yeah. So we went round, we were filling sandbags, and he put, you know, building up sandbags in front. I mean, we didn't lift the sandbags. It was, they had fellas there doing that job where they put them in front of the doors and round the windows and what have you. And then gas masks were issued. And with us going to help them with the sandbags, they asked us if we'd like to go and help to put the gas masks together. And we physically had to put the children's gas masks together. And my job was to, they had a black bottom made out of tin. And I don't know what was inside. I don't know if it was like a charcoal mixture or something that filtered any air that you were breathing. And my job was to put that onto the rubber mask and then black tape around. And on the inside, there was a small stud that you put a black diaphragm on so that when you breathed in, it opened. When you breathed out, it closed. The breathing come out of another thing on the front. So we were doing that, and which was interesting at the time. Because the baby of the family then was put in like a small tent container thing. You could see the baby, like plastic, but they put them in and zipped them up. And that was the baby's gas mask, you know. And you had to carry these gas masks wherever you went. When you went to school, wherever you went, you had to take your gas mask with you.
And what were they like to wear? Did you test them?
Oh, they were comfortable enough. They were comfortable enough. There again, as I say, it was just something that was there at the time that you had to do. And I think what it is, it becomes second nature. All these things like rationing, and after you've been on it a while, you don't even notice it's there. It's just the sort of thing that you get used to, and I think your body gets used to it. And in a way, I suppose the way they look at things today, you'd pay a fortune for what we had then, which everybody, you couldn't have anymore. So you didn't crave anymore. Well, at least we didn't. But I don't think the majority of people did crave any more than what they were getting. And
now, did you have, before the bombing started, did you get an air raid shelter, either an Anderson
yes,
or
well,
a Morrison?
Yes, what they did, they put air raid shelters on one side of the road, on the opposite side of the road to us, they put...
communal ones?
Yeah. But on our side, where our yards were a bit bigger, we had a brick one built in the backyard.
Not an Anderson, then?
No, a brick. Concrete.
Can you describe
roof.
It, then?
Yeah, it was probably something like... eight by eight. And probably... 8 foot high. It's just a perfect square.
And it wasn't down at
with
all?
With a concrete roof.
Flat?
Yeah, flat concrete roof. And there was no door on them. My dad sort of fixed them up for a door. And he put wood on the floor inside. And he had some old drawers, like chest of drawers. And he made brackets on the wall and put little blankets in them. They were for the babies. The babies went in the drawers. And then he built a form round, and we all sat round the form, and we spent many a 8-hour night in them. There again, first time it was a bit hair-raising. But as I said before, once you've done it for a while, it just becomes second nature, and you don't and you don't give it another thought.
Did you ever go in the communal once, the other side of the road?
No. No, we always went on our own. The only time I ever went in the communal one was once I was 14 and that, I'd go to the cinema of a night. If the siren went and you came out the cinema, my father always said to me, if that, ever that happens, don't try and get home. Get yourself into a communal centre, shelter, which we did.
And what were they like?
Oh, they were brilliant, because you'd always have the comedians in there, and you'd have somebody playing a mouth organ, or you'd have singing and what have you, you know. Yeah, it was good, of course. And the girls would all be up dancing. So there again, it was something else again.
Now, how did the raids start? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
When did they start? Would that be
well
September 40?
Yeah,
that's
I think
the London one started.
Yeah, the London one started, and I think we got ours a bit later than that. I don't know if it was early 41 or late 40 when they started.
Were you still at school?
No. So it must have been.
So up to then. Oh well, let's do leaving school then. So.
Yeah.
When did you leave school? You at 14.
At 14, yeah.
So that would be October 40.
Yeah.
And no chance of staying on.
No. Poof, no. No, 14, that was it.
So what were you going to do for a job?
Well,
who planned it? Was it you, your mum, your dad, or
me
you?
Dad. My dad got me my first job, which was prior to leaving school, I had a job.
Oh, well, tell us, do that first then.
I had a job as order boy. And it was a painters and decorators shop on Grove Road. And in them days, wallpaper didn't come like it comes now. It had a little border at each side of the edge. And people would come in and you'd have to say to them, well, do you want it trimmed to take the border off each side? And they'd say yes, and then you have to put it on this machine, set the cutters, and virtually just turn it by hand until the whole roll went through. Because it's not like it is now. You couldn't really butt paper like you can now, because the patterns weren't that, you know, brilliant. So people would say, well, I only want the border taken off one side, so they'd overlap the other side onto the border. I used to take the orders out, and he'd cut glass. He showed me how to cut glass. And I used to deliver the wallpaper and paint and stuff. And then from there...
By bike or...?
Yeah, on a two-wheeler bike, yeah, an order bike with a basket on the front.
Good job?
Eh?
A good job, was it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
So what was your first real job?
Was down at Camelards, the shipyard, in the ship fitting shop.
And what were you called? I mean, what was your job? Were you a fitter?
Oh, I was only a messenger then. Because I was only 14 and a half.
So what does a messenger boy do?
Well, it just a lackey, really, wherever you're based in the office and that send you here and there with messages and one thing. In fact, the Prince of Wales, the battleship was being built then. It was almost finished. And her ship number was 1026. And I always remember when I first started, they sent me from the office with a note to the fitting shop on the Prince of Wales. And I went and I gave the note in to the fella. And he said, all right, son, wait there. And it must have been half an hour or an hour went by. And I said to him, are you going to see to me or what? He said, well, you've come for a long stand. So you can go now. And that was, you know, the sort of thing they did. But I didn't like it very much, that job. So I left there.